What do you do there?
I'm a detective.
A detective?
Mm-hmm. Police department received a call reporting a dead body in Freedom Creek. I need you to remember as much as you can. We can find out who did this. She's a needle in a thousand haystacks.
The ground is just falling out beneath you.
Mom, stay out of it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to East Town and Down, the unofficial podcast of the HBO Max miniseries, Mayor of East Town, starring Kate Winslet. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth, and I'm joined by the very lovely and very talented Leah Bonema. Leah, how the hell are you?
Delighted to be here for the unofficial podcast. But I think we're going to be the most emotionally invested because, wow, what a show.
Oh, my God. It's so great.
My Fitbit went off in the middle of it because it thought I was working out. That's how hard my heart rate was raising. Not that's that I hilarious. Have a Fitbit. It's a knockoff. So it's like, you're so fit. That's the name of it.
with a you are, like, you're so fit. Hilarious. What are you doing?
You want to pay $20? Yes. But in the middle of it, it was like, oh, you're working out. I was like, no, I'm panicking.
And it gave you a run. It gave your the show gave it a run for its money, huh?
Yeah, it did. Wow. And you last night texted me because you saw it first on the East Coast, and you were like, strap in.
Yeah, it's amazing. We're going to talk about the first two episodes. We're going to talk about Miss Lady Hawk herself, episode one, and Father's episode two. And we'll start with episode one, Miss Lady Hawk herself. What were some of your general impressions on this first episode?
So the first episode, I like to not look into the show. You know, I like to not know anything. So except like, oh, that's, I'm going to like that. You know what I mean? You know me right away. I'm like, sure. I love a dark detective series. You could tell right away this is going to be my jam. But I didn't want to research anything. Mm-hmm. So what I loved right away, I knew where it was located geographically because of how hard Kate Winslet nailed that accent, like coming out the gate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that long overdose.
And I have family from that area. You know what I mean? So immediately I was like, woo, we're in Pennsylvania.
Yes. Southeastern Pennsylvania. East Town is a real place in Delaware County. Close to not that far from Philly, but far enough to be.
It's like near Bucks County, isn't it?
Yeah, something like it. Well, it's Delaware County. Yeah, southeastern Pennsylvania is the region, and yeah, they definitely have long O's, overdose, and they say water, like home, water,
home and water.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else, but it's definitely distinct. And she fucking killed it. And I was looking at a featurette and she was saying that she, you know, not only did she take in the accent, but she lived there for a while before they started filming. She was in the town, living there, immersing herself in that culture and really just being a part of that region. And it shows. It's because she dedicated herself to taking on this accent. Everybody else did it too. So she's the leader. She's one of the EPs on the show, and she definitely held it down.
I think, and this is a general comment about all the episodes that watching, you know, I rewatched, it's like a lesson in acting and in writing because everybody's just nailing everything. And you're like, more, like everything is just raising the stakes.
Yeah.
But regarding your question about the first episode, you know, right away you get the like tortured character, you know, flawed. He's your flawed detective, which I love that genre. Mm-hmm. You get that she like knows everybody in the town. She has relationships with everybody. She's trying to do what's right. These are like the first couple scenes. What were your initial reactions?
I really loved everything about it. I love how they established the characters. It took its time. I love how you instantly root for Mayor because there's a script writing term called save the cat, where if the main character saves a cat so you can like them. So the audience feels like they're invested in this character and you like him. So her save the cat moment was waking up early in the morning, getting awakened by Mrs. Carroll, who says that there was a peeping Tom trying to creep out her granddaughter. And she goes over, and that's not part of her job. Like, she could have called, Mrs. Carroll should have called the police station. She tells her that. She's like, look, I handle the overdoses and all the other bad stuff that happens in town. And it's just like a sweet old lady, but she's there. She's annoyed by it, but she's still there. Like, she still shows up. And that's like, that's very telling to who she is as a person, even though she has this gruff demeanor, you know. And we find out why, you know, as the episode progresses and as we get through these first two episodes. But yeah, I really like that. Just the way that it just kind of took its time. Like this first episode just laid the foundation of all the major players for the most part. We are introduced to some later, but I just love the way that they laid the foundation for the show. And then when the event happens, when we find out about what happens, now we're ready to roll. And so, yeah.
I think anybody listening to this knows we're going to spoil the shit out of it. So
we're spoiling the shit out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So the event being Aaron going to the park.
The murder of Aaron McMenamin, a 17-year-old high school student. She's a single mom. And she's essentially catfished by her ex-boyfriend and his current girlfriend. And she gets beat up.
Although, do we know that the ex-boyfriend was involved in the catfishing? I don't know if we knew.
Yes, because he was there. Yeah.
Oh, you know, okay.
He's there. He's there, and it's some bullshit.
I feel like the second episode replaced the memory in my mind. Of that scene, you know, because what I just remember is feeling, you know, you remember being a teenager and just everybody like making fun, you know what I mean? It's just such a hard feeling. And at that point, we've already established that a girl the year before went missing.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we know that something happened with her son because she's got the grandkid and she sees like a mirage of him. So they're setting up all these like, layers.
So the way that they establish her, it's like, you know, something's gonna happen to her, to Aaron, because she's so sweet. Mm-hmm. Like, she is a young mother, and yes, it changed her life and it kind of isolated her from her, you know, her counterparts, like her friends and everything, but she cares about her kid and she's so sweet. She's gonna miss her kid because it's gonna be her ex's Dylan's weekend with the kid. And the way that she's laying on the bed when we first see her is a lot like she is when they find her in episode two. That's another thing to look at, that's like kind of like a foreshadowing of what happens.
And she's trying to get this ear surgery for her son.
Yeah,
she's trying to get clear. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, you got it. Yeah.
She's like clearly the invested parent. Like, she's trying to figure out this ear surgery. She's trying to make sure the kid's like taken care of. And then Dylan comes in and he's just an a-hole. Mm-hmm. And then her dad comes home and he's like a very angry, harboring anger person. So her like sweetness is surrounded by all of these sort of villains.
Yeah. And it's just I notice how the music changes every time she's on screen. It's all adorable. She's sweet when she goes to the park to meet her, to meet quote unquote Brendan. She's on a pink bike, the total ingenue of the show. And it's just like, wow, they're really laying it on thick. They're laying it on thick, but in a good way. But you know that something's going to happen to her. But
yeah,
it's
this
just
poor girl immediately, yeah. Like this poor girl.
Yeah. And it's like, Jesus Christ. Okay. We get it.
I'm also from a small town. And like, as a teenager, we partied in the woods, you know what I mean? And everybody knew everybody.
Yeah.
And so immediately you're locked into this, you know, I immediately feel that.
In New Hampshire, right?
in Maine.
Maine, damn it, fuck.
Right next to each other.
Yeah, that's true.
Right next to each other.
I think I went to a Walmart in New Hampshire once after a gig. So I never was, I don't think I was ever as far up as Maine. Maybe the further, is Rhode Island above?
Below.
Below, okay, all right. So you guys would hang out and party in the woods?
In the woods.
Yeah.
It's very standard, very standard.
Yeah. It seems like that would be something kids would do. Yeah, it's totally on brand for those kids. So Mare, after she leaves the Carroll's house, Mr. Carroll comes home, and him and his wife fight, have a little argument about the camera being set up. They would have caught the prowler if he had set up that camera that they bought at Best Buy. They have a little argument, and he's like, "Oh, Mayor, you're big night tonight. You got the thing, you know, you're in the paper." And they try to go get it, and she escapes from the house so she doesn't have to be bothered with them. And she goes to the police department, police station, and she goes inside, and they're introducing a new officer, Officer Trammell, and they're welcoming him. Police chief motions her in to come into his office, and he's telling her, he's like, you know, that this case, Katie Bailey, this missing girl, she's been missing for over a year. And there's a press conference with her mother, Dawn. And Dawn, it looks like we find out later that she's a cancer patient, and she's been looking for her daughter, and nothing's happened. And the chief's like, "Hey, we got to get this together. If we don't, we're going to have to call the county commission, the county office, to bring down another detective to help." Mayor doesn't like that. She's pissed off about that. And the mother's demanding action. And Mayor's like, "Look, you know, Katie's a known drug user with a history of prostitution. It's like, what she's probably, who knows where she is, you know?" How did you feel about that part?
Well, also walking up to that, like, they really establish Mayor's character as somebody who is like off put by people. Like when they're like, "Let me go get the paper. You have that thing tonight." And she's like, "Eh," you know what I mean? But then also she like clearly cares about everybody.
Yeah.
So it's like very interesting dichotomy. And then with Katie's mother, it's interesting because I can't quite wrap my head around, because Mara says like, "I went door to door with you, like I really," and then also people are like, "You didn't do enough." So there's this interesting mix of you don't know what happened,
right.
You immediately want to side with Mayor because you feel like she's trying her best and covering up her vulnerabilities and not being appreciated. But also it is possible that because of like whatever she was going through with her son or whatever, which we don't know yet what it is, that she overlooked things.
Yeah, right.
But I don't want to believe that of her.
No, but I think that's part of it. And I think it's fleshed out a lot more in episode two, but right now we just know, okay, she walks into the station. Jan at the front desk tells her, the newspaper article, and it reads, "Remembering when the impossible happened, celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Hawks basketball state championship season." And it's been 25 years. She did something with basketball. Jan says, "Oh, I'm going to hang this up and I'm a framing to hang it up in your room." And Mayor's like, and then we go back to Aaron's house. And like you alluded to earlier, her dad comes home, and her dad is her baby Dylan comes to pick the kid up. Sorry. And we talked about that. And she tells him, "Hey, we got to get this ear surgery going. The baby needs it. It's going to mess him up if he doesn't get it." And Dylan's like, "Oh, everything needs to go to the court." And they get outside, and Brianna, his current girlfriend, is there and say, "Don't be texting my man." And it's so weird because like that's the baby's mom, so she has to have contact with him. And it's just She's just a total asshole.
And Brianna's really aggressive. Like, it's like she doesn't realize there's a kid involved at all. She's not giving her any leeway.
Right. She's just so selfish.
And Dylan's no gem. Dylan is.
He's an asshole. Yeah. Yeah. He's a piece of shit. They're both pieces.
They're both garbage.
Yeah. So. Horrible people. And so then we established that they're horrible people. And Mayor, we cut to Mayor at a pet store. She's looking for a tank for her grandson's turtle that was given to him. The salesman tries to sell her a really nice one, the Amphibian Life 1500 with a UVB heating kit for $150. And she's like, no, that's too much. That's too expensive. And he's like, all right, okay. He's still trying to sell. He's like, what about the Oasis Habitat for $99? She says, look, I don't need all the bells and whistles because my grandson is four years old and he has trouble with tasks. And he was like, all right, look, how about, you know, then while she's doing that, she gets a call from the new officer, Officer Trammell. He tells her that there's been a burglary at 535 Argyle Road. And then you hear like how everybody knows each other. You cut to that scene with Trammell. There's Beth Hanlon on the other line and on beside the officer Trammell. And she's like, just tell him it's Beth Hanlon. Tell her it's Beth Hanlon. And he said, they need to come over. Mayor needs to come over to process the scene. And so she said she thinks it's her brother, Freddie, that's doing this, that's broken into the house and stolen some stuff. And because Freddie was shooting up in the basement the night before. So while she's doing that, she sees a tank that's $39.99. And that's the perfect one for her. And so she goes. So what did you think about that scene? What does this tell us? Does this give us any more insight to Mayor?
Like, I thought that was pushing, that was still like setting us up with that. Like, she's kind of like, this guy's trying to sell her this nice thing. And she's that sort of like callous, like, no. But then underneath it all, in the middle of her work day, she's going to get an aquarium for her grandson, which is very caring and delightful. So it's that, it's just reiterating that dichotomy. And then the small town call comes in to be like, she handles it, to show us again how she handles everything, because everybody knows her. Even if they're like mad at her for stuff, they're like, she knows them. She's dealt with her problems. She's their regular person.
She reminds me of my mom. My mom will do stuff, but she'll talk shit about people that she doesn't for. But she genuinely wants to do good things. Let's see. Okay, so she gets that. She goes over to Beth's and she gets a call. This is her second call from Frank. She got one earlier as she was leaving, but we don't know who Frank is yet, but she declined the call. She gets another call from Frank and she answers and they talk about the turtle aquarium. She's like, look, I wasted a half hour buying this tank because you brought home a turtle the night before. And Frank tells her that it's something that the grandson can look after. And she reminds him of a lizard that died 2 days after, wait, like a week or two. A lizard that died about 2 weeks after he bought it. And she had to tell him she flushed it down the toilet. He's like, you flushed it down the toilet? She's like, yeah. And Frank's trying to tell her something, but she hangs up on Frank again because she sees Freddie. Beth Hanlon's sister walking around, Beth Hanlon's brother walking around, and she gets out of her car to chase Freddie on foot. Freddie sees her and starts running. He climbs over the fence. Mayor tries to climb over the fence and twists her right ankle, and she chases Freddie into his house. Trammell is there. He's freaked out by the blood, which is so funny. That's probably there's a couple funny moments in there.
She is funny. She's funny about things.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's funny just because we're comics and we find very dark things funny, but she's funny. She has a lot of funny moments. And with him, she's actually quite gentle with like that he's a cop and he can't see blood. Like that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But she's actually very caring.
She is. And she tells him to breathe. You know, why did you pick this job? You should have thought about that before you signed on to this. And he's freaked out, and they're in the bathroom. Freddie's in another room, and Trammell is sitting on the toilet doing breathing exercises. So Freddie lets her into the room that he's in. She says, "What's going on? I know you stole this stuff. What's going on?" And then he starts complaining about he's basically a drug addict.
Yeah.
And
a relapsing drug addict.
And he's broke into his sister's house to get more money for drugs. And she walks him out. Let's see, to have more. Yeah. So Mayor cuffs him and brings him outside. They're going outside. They're talking about why is your house so cold? He said, because the gas company cut off the power. And she's like, well, they can't do that because it's against the law. And he's like, that's what I said. I told him that. And so then as they're walking out, Beth runs up on him and punches Freddie in the face. And she can't take it anymore because Freddie lost his family and his job for drugs. And it was just like, you know, it's just really sad. Like, that happens in a lot of families. And what did you think about that sequence?
Well, I thought that it was I think they're just giving us more illustrations of Mare's character. And this is that, in that, like, she twists her ankle, she keeps going, you know, she's just sort of very pragmatic. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? She's just going to do the thing. And then in the middle of all this, like, crisis, like, she doesn't want the guy's heat cut off. You can tell she empathizes with the sister. She's sort of just trying, you get the idea that she's really trying to do the best for everybody, even though she's a coarse person. Mm-hmm. And I think this was just like further illustrating that about her character.
Yeah. Yeah. And it shows her also that she's really competent at her job. You know, like, she is good. We still got this open case of Katie Bailey, but she's good at her job. The people know her. They respect her. A great scene from these two actors. Like, it's just like, they were so, like, the woman playing Beth, I had always liked to say their names, the actors and actresses.
I love that.
Chinasa Ogubagu. I guess that's how you say it. I'm butchering it, but trying to give her props. And Freddie's played by Dominique Jackson. It was just like a really good scene. Like, it just, like, they killed it. And you can definitely tell that, like, there's like an inner life with these characters who are ancillary characters. And you kind of see them pop up, you know, in different scenes. You see, you know, we find more about Beth later.
I also feel like, you know, they're presenting, everybody's kind of broken in many ways.
Mm,
and they're presenting this to us. And then also, like, the cinematography, everything's sort of like in grays and browns. Yeah. And so it's sort of like, I wouldn't say depressing, but it's that sort of like where you feel that sort of brokenness in the people, you know what I mean? But then they're still striving to do the best they can.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. Like, I was reading like a lot of, you know, like a few articles about the show, and they're always like bleak and drab, but it's real. It's grounded. It's like, I always say, like, of the earth. It's this, it's not even like a hyper realism. It's just authentic. And like, I know those people. We've performed for those people.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's very real. It's like a small town.
Yeah.
It's in like a colder season.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I don't find it bleak at all. I find it, as you said, very realistic.
Yeah. Cause it's so like, and see, like, you spend a lot of time. I know you're in LA now, but you spend a lot of time in the Northeast. You're from here. And it's like, that is, I don't know. Sometimes people can kind of be, how do you say, like, removed, like the elite. They're like, oh, it's so drab because they're wearing flannels. You know what I mean? But it's like, it's fucking real. Like, those are the people that are the engine of this country, you know, in a lot of ways. Not all of them.
Very real. I totally agree with you.
like, you know, like doing those stand-up shows, like in firehouse shows. And one of the last shows that I did was like a firehouse show in one, like in a fire department. People, I fucking perform for those people. So I have, those are some of the best crowds too, because they've been through shit.
Well, I mean, this is a lot like where I grew up. Everybody knows everybody. You know what I mean? It's dark for a lot of the year. You know, there's like, people are dealing with shit. Everybody knows what everybody's dealing with. People call people by, you know, name. Can you send this person over? You know what I mean? It's very realistic.
And I, like that moment where he's just like, I'm sorry, Bethany, I'm sorry. That was a little funny, but it's not meant to be. But it's just like, it was just, it's so real. And it's sometimes you almost got to laugh to keep from crying. And so
why is every actor so good? You're like, they're amazing. Actor, you're just like, it's like a scene study. I also want to say, and this is not, but it's very, they also establish, they just flush these characters out so much. They establish that she doesn't, not only does she like clearly not take care of herself, like she's doing all these other things, but she's also, she just eats garbage. I feel
I love it.
I love it so much. Because she's got these sandwiches from places that are just like load. You know what I mean?
We're gonna get to that. Yeah. Well, and then she says, like, you know, she tells Trammell, look, talk to I thought I had what I wanted, but anyway, she's like, talk to like the deacon at the church, and then call Pico Gas, because if they don't turn his heat back on, we're calling the utilities commission. And so she makes sure Trammell takes him to the shelter, because she's basically like, you want to go to the jail or you want to go to the shelter? And he's like, well, I don't want to. He's like, well, I guess you want to go to jail. He's like, well, take me to the shelter then. Shit. Like, you know, he's mad. So now we're back at Aaron's house. And this is a question that I need to ask you, Leah. And maybe you can shed some insight on this. She's making mac and cheese for dinner. As a white woman, do...
I already love this question. I can't wait for what the rest of it is.
Do you guys, and you're going to have to speak for white America with this. So do white people eat macaroni and cheese as an entree?
I think it depends on the occasion.
Okay.
Because like for a big meal, it's a side.
Okay. Yeah.
For you know us. I mean? Like a Thanksgiving or a Christmas or like a summer, like a 4th of July barbecue.
Yeah.
It's a side.
Okay.
But like a box of Kraft macaroni and cheese is like what? 99 cents.
Yeah.
So it could be, it's a dinner.
But okay.
That's not macaroni and cheese, like a side of macaroni and cheese, which is like not from a box.
Yeah. Because there was a big hullabaloo in this film called Malcolm and Marie late last year, where there was a character that ate like a shit ton of like macaroni and cheese, but it was just like a late night dinner because they were coming in from a ceremony and they just were eating. He was just eating something really quick. But this one is like that Stouffer's mac and cheese. And I'm not gonna thumb my nose at that, because that is good mac and cheese, but I would prefer cooking it in the oven before I put it in the microwave. But that was just something I wanted to ask about, you know. So she's making macaroni and cheese.
Well, I think there's a difference between she's making like the orange ones. She's making like a Kraft mac and cheese.
No, it's the Stouffer's.
Oh, is it?
Because
we're looking at totally different things.
Because she pulled back that film, that plastic film.
Oh, that's right. And she's microwaving it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I so much pressure to represent white America.
But you said what you answered the question, though, because like all the time it's been like a side for me growing up. Like I really like Whole Foods is macaroni and cheese. When I have a taste for it, like I'll go and have it as a side. Like I'll make some baked chicken and like a vegetable and like mac and cheese. It's good. But yeah, I just wanted to know that, because I that was kind of a thing, like, whatever, you know.
I also don't eat. I feel like if I'm eating microwaved macaroni and cheese, like I got real sad that day. You know what I mean? something because, but also like definitely when I'm like watching Money or whatever,
yeah,
then that, then it's a box of macaroni and cheese because yeah, it's substantially cheaper than microwave
food. Got you. Got you. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise it's a side and I'm not cooking it like that. As you said, I'm putting it in the oven and it's got like stuff on the top.
Yeah.
To crisp it out.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So
I'll eat a box of macaroni and cheese, the orange ones, as a meal for sure. But okay, definitely somebody hurt my feelings that day if that's what I'm doing.
Okay. Got you. I understand. So we're back at Erin's house. She's making, she's making the mac and cheese. It looks like the Stouffer's because she's pulling that film back. And I asked you about that. her father, Kenny McMenamin, played by Patrick Murney, comes home, kind of treats her.
Let's just say right away, as soon as you see that kind of a mustache on a man, you know he's problematic.
Yeah, very, very problematic. Would not be reading Jezebel at all on his lunch break. Dude's not going to read that.
It's like it's like that, a very aggressive, like down the, oh, you're like, yeah. Oh no.
Because she's like, how is work? He's like, well, you'd like to spend a day with me and see how it is. And you have a good, you know, like he was just really out of it. She gives him a plate. He starts to eat, burns his mouth. And he's like, oh, Erin, you know, it's just yells at her. And they talk about the kid. They talk about the baby, you know, like, what is this? Is Dylan paying for this kid? Because I pay for all this shit. He needs to, did you talk to him about the ear operation? And she lies to him. He knows she's lying. And she's like, yeah, he did. And he looks at her. He knows she's lying.
You sense sort of the sort of like small town. Everybody's tired. Everybody's working hard. Everybody's probably slightly underpaid. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And everybody is like exhausted from things not working out.
Right. Right. And you can tell because he's playing.
Which is maybe signified in the mac and cheese, microwave mac and cheese.
Yeah, it is. Not maybe. I think you're absolutely right. Because he's playing with both those things, right? You know, it's like, I'm tired. I'm paying for this baby. I care about the baby. Is this guy on his shit? He better not be treating my daughter wrong. But I'm still frustrated.
And I'm still taking it out on my daughter.
Right, right, right. He's playing a lot of things, and it's really just great. Great writing, and it's written by Brad Inglesby, who recently gave us The Way Back, which made me cry in the theater. One of the last movies I saw before the pandemic hit, and a really good movie that you might like called American Woman, starring Sienna Miller. It's about a woman who, a single mother whose child goes missing, and she's forced to raise her grandson. And it's like kind of like in the same vein as this, the same type of town. I just, as I found out about this, the creator, Inglesby, I just started kind of looking at some more of his stuff. And he did this film called Out of the Furnace also, which kind of deals with
that. That was Christian Bale.
Yeah.
It's also in a rural area.
Yeah. I like the, there's something about like small town America that fascinates me. In a lot of ways, I always like performing in small towns, and I like stories about it too, about as well. So like you said, he's playing this frustration that's going on. She gets a text, she texts this guy named Brendan, who we talked about a little earlier, the catfisher, who's supposed to meet up with her later that night in the woods. She asked her dad to borrow the car. He tells her no, because she scratched it up the last time and she lied about it. And they're going to meet at the park at 10. So that,
and then immediately you feel it coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's going out there. No vehicle.
Yeah. In the woods.
What could go wrong?
Yeah. Everything.
But as you were saying, the writing, because it's just like boom, boom, mm-hmm. boom, boom. Heightening every scene. It's like really incredible.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's just really on point. So the next scene, Mare is looking at Katie Bailey's files at the police station. She drives home to her grandson, Drew, and her mother, Helen, and the daughter, Siobhan, and her cousins there, Pastor Danny. And she finds out, like, there, this is another part of, like, the world building. Just like that, she comes home. It's all this. Everything's like kind of in medias res. Like we're dropped into this world. Like, and it's, and they just keep going. And so she, you see what her family life is like. Everybody's kind of getting ready for something a little bit. And she finds out that Frank is her ex-husband, mm-hmm. and he's getting engaged. They just got engaged. Everybody's going to a party at Frank's house,
which is right next door,
right behind.
Yep.
Right behind, because he got a good deal. That's why he got the house. We later find on everybody's going over to his house for a rib roast because they're not going to her ceremony, but because she said, how come you guys aren't coming to my thing? And she said, you told us not to. So everybody,
you immediately feel sorry for her.
Yeah. You feel bad for her. And they're like, you know, almost everybody knew for about 3 weeks, and she's sitting there. She puts, you know, on some frozen French fries on her ankle.
Yeah. Great.
And she gets a cheese puff, and she puts some cheese whiz on a cheese puff and eats it.
I love it.
At first I thought it was a carrot. And then the second time I was like, oh no, that's a cheese puff. And then Frank comes in. It's like, you know, he comes in and to borrow some oregano. And, you know, it's just like, that's just a part of their life. You know, they're kind of a broken family, but not because they still participate, because they still got kids, you know.
Kids, and you can feel that they're trying to co-parent.
Yes. Yeah, they are. Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. So that's kind of just like exposition. Then the next scene we see Aaron and they have some friendly banter too. Like they don't take each other too seriously. Also, there's a little bit of God talk because of Danny's obviously the pastor and Mayor hasn't been to church in a long time. Okay, so the next scene we get Aaron going to visit her girlfriend Jess. Again, she's on the bike, the pink bike, adorable, cute cherub face girl.
You know, they're just really establishing her. She's really like a young teenager who had a child. She's going to her girlfriend's house. They're having like girlfriend time. You know, it's very high school.
Yeah.
She has all these responsibilities.
Right. And she seems like a sweet kid. She gets this night out. And Aaron's mother gives her a makeover before the date over at Sharp's Woods.
Aaron's friend.
Jess's mother gives Aaron a makeover before she goes to the woods
to meet this, you know, man she only knows from the internet. So it's like this big deal date for her. And all of us at home watching are like, this isn't going to go well.
Yeah.
This has never gone well.
And she tells her that Brendan says he wants to see her dance again or something, wants her to get back to dancing.
Yeah, for her to be happy. And it really touched her. And you're like, oh no. Like,
oh my God. Yeah. So Mayor gets ready to go out to her to the ceremony. And she goes over to, well, party is, she's getting ready. She sees in the back of the house, the Frank's party is starting to pop off. Siobhan is singing. She's singing a song called Who You Are by a group called Mannequin Pussy. Salud.
With her girlfriend.
Because Siobhan is queer. And they're just having a great time. Everybody's having a good time. They're talking about when they can get some more weed and how good the weed is, or who has the, you know, just talking about, you know, scoring some weed. I didn't do that in high school because I was a fucking square. I was worried about the drama club.
I think this is very small town. You know what I mean? Because like you don't have a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You go out in the woods and you get effed up. You know what I mean? It's like.
Sure. Yeah, that's true. So they're just having a good time without Mayor. And so she gets ready. She goes over to her best friend since childhood, Lori's house, to get ready. She goes and
Lori, who I absolutely loved in, oh, this is me. I love that I'll tell you something and then I'll forget what I'm talking about.
Tell me.
Johnny Depp, it's Boston Mafia. It was based on a true story. He's
Whitey Bulger.
Yes. I think she plays the FBI's wife.
Okay.
There's that great scene where Johnny Depp goes and basically doesn't want her to say anything. And you're like, I'm terrified.
First of all, I fucking love Julianne Nichols. I have a huge crush on her. I think she's so hot in this. I don't know if I'm getting to my age where it's like, you know, I don't know as a woman if you experience this, but like, you know, when you're like younger in your 20s or whatever, like you're looking at a show and the people that are kind of like your age, you're like, oh, look at the young, hot actor or whatever. And it's like, because I don't know if I'm explaining this right. Basically, I'm really looking at these middle-aged women a lot now, more than the hot, sexy ingenue. But I've always had a thing for Julianne Nicholson. And I was watching this thing, like a behind-the-scenes thing for this show, and she was done up. Like, she was done up, like, actory, pretty Hollywood woman. And she looked good. But her in this show as just like a mom, just like a mom. Oh, so beautiful. Hot. Love it. I'm not trying to be a creep, but she looks great.
I've from the gate, I was always interested in the older people. Like,
okay.
I remember as a kid being like, do you remember Jeremy Irons?
Yeah.
In Die Hard 3. Is it 3 with Samuel L. Jackson?
I don't remember.
I love how, like, I know the Die Hards and, like, you know, like, the really good indie movies.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm so and I was like, oh, I like that. You know what I mean? And I like Willem Dafoe. Like, what 12-year-old likes Willem Dafoe? You know what I mean? But that was, like, always my shit. I was always on
Die Hard with a Vengeance. Die Hard with a Vengeance was Sam Jackson was in that one.
Yeah, Jeremy Irons plays the bad guy and he's wearing like a tank top vest and you're like, I like that.
That's so funny. Like, I like what's her name? Amy Peetz is like an actress that's like, she had a guest star stint on The Office and she was on a sitcom and she's on something. She's on the, This John Stamos Disney Plus show called Big Shot, and she plays John Stamos's ex-wife.
Well, I haven't seen that yet, but I love John Stamos, so I will be checking that out.
It's fun. It's like, I don't know how deep into sports you are, but it's kind of like if Rick Pitino got kicked out of college basketball to go coach ball at a prep school for an all-girls team.
Okay.
Just kind of like that.
I get the setup.
Some people, you know, people listening would probably know what I'm talking about. So we're at...
I feel that's a very standard setup. Not standard in a bad way, but like you immediately get there. Like somebody who was like on their way up in like a big... And then they do something wrong. Or they broke their knee. Their knee gets busted. Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or they were drunk driving. Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then they... You know, it's like Hoosiers.
Yeah, this one he throws a chair at her and it hits a ref or something and they kick him out. This is extreme shit. All right, so back to Lori. Mayor goes to Lori's house and they get ready for the ceremony. You see her family, her kids. They talk about Don because they saw the news and everything and of the press conference. Don, you know, really wanted some action to be taken. We find out that it's confirmed that she is undergoing cancer treatment. And Mayor basically confides to Lori. She says they're never going to find her because she's a needle in 1,000 haystacks. And Lori's basically like, don't ever say that. They talk about another teammate who they went to her wedding and then she got remarried and her life's kind of in shambles a bit. They eat some she eats a Mary eats a slice of pizza.
She's just constantly eating garbage. I love it.
I fucking love it. And she has
vapes. She vapes.
She vapes. She has a Rolling Rock, which I haven't had a Rolling Rock in years. Not a bad beer, but you know,
actually put beer Rolling Rock on the classier side.
You do? Okay. I like it.
A Natty Light. I mean, there's a Natty Light Rolling Rock. You know what I mean? It's substantially up the gradient range.
There was an article about proposing, like they're saying, oh, why doesn't she drink a Yingling? Because like that's more of a Pennsylvania based beer. But Rolling Rock, their brewery moved to Newark. I think their main one did. And they're like, oh, why would she drink Rolling? You know, trying to be really investigative. But we see that Kenny drinks a Yingling. I think he has a Yingling when he's eating that macaroni and cheese. This podcast is sponsored by Rolling Rock and Wawa Coffee.
Stouffer's
later. Yeah. I just love how like it's this show is fucking pitch perfect. Okay. So they get to the basketball ceremony and we find that Beth is a former teammate. Lori's a teammate. This woman, Dawn, that they're talking about is a teammate. Dawn, the woman who had cancer, is a teammate. And they get to talking. And
they're like in the back getting ready to go out.
In the
basketball, in the bleachers, you can hear them, and they're like in that hallway.
Yeah, it's like their halftime ceremony, and they bring her. You know, they're announcing all the ladies, and you find out that these people are closer than you know. They play ball together, and it's like oh, Beth was on the team, Dawn was on the team, and Mayor cannot help herself and say, hey, why would you go on TV? You know, I did all this stuff for you. Like I tried, I'm really trying. Dawn says, it's not about you. Everything's not about you. And Mayor is the last one up. They call her name. She limps out. And we cut to the bar where Mayor, it's like the after party at the local bar. And Mayor goes to get a drink. And she meets this dude named Richard.
Yeah, I had no idea that Guy Pearce was in it. When he like, I go, Guy Pearce.
Are you a fan, like a big fan?
Oh, I think he's terrific. His remake, Tom Hardy actually produced it, of Scrooge that FX did. Oh, it takes the Scrooge story, which is inherently dark. Obviously, a man is seeing his vices and the repercussions of his actions.
Yeah,
it goes so dark because you actually see what made him this way.
Yeah,
and Guy Pearce knocks it out of the park. It's so well done.
All right, and his name is Richard. He's a writer who's guest lecturing at Kettleman College, creative writing. They flirt a little bit. He tries to tries to mack her.
He's giving out the sex vibe like away. He's like,
and I get it. That type of woman is attractive that doesn't want to be bothered with you. And it's just like he says, oh, so what are you here for? And he's like, you know, I hit a shot in a game 25 years ago. Oh, that's a pretty big deal. And she says, in most towns, no. But this town and most places know around here. Yeah. I just want to make sure I'm sequentially right. Yeah. So they eventually go back to his place. They have sex and she tells there's more.
Great scene.
Yeah. It's a great scene. That's like, she just thinks it's a one night stand. He wants more. And she says, I can't, he wants to see her again to take her out for a proper night out. She says, no, you know, I got to get up early. I got to take my grandson to school or something. He's like, oh, you're a grandmother. And she says, did I fuck like a grandmother? And I was like, oh shit. I was like, yeah. All right.
It was really a great sex scene because it just felt, you know, it just felt, it's so grounded.
Yeah.
It so felt like a lady who was like, you know what, let's
do it. Let's do it.
And then he's still being like a guy, you know, sort of like trying to still, when she's like out the door, he's like still trying to work it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I would be doing that too. Okay. Don't you want dinner? That's my problem. It's like, well, don't you, I was like you, I like touching you, but I want to get some dinner. I want to hang out. She's like, no.
She's just like, I'm busy, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then we get back to Aaron riding. So we get back to that. She goes to Sharp's Woods. We find out that she's actually been catfished and we see Brianna and Dylan. And,
which I didn't see. I knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
But I didn't actually, I never thought it was them doing it.
Oh yeah, they were there. Like they, I mean, Dylan was standing there watching it.
No, I mean, I didn't guess in advance.
Oh, I didn't either. I just knew it was going to be a problem.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't going to be him, but I didn't think it was going to be, because then you're like, oh, Brianna is like invested in being mean. She's just not going to be mean when she shows up. She's like planning meanness.
Right.
It's like, for the mother of a child, you know what I mean? You're like, this is out of control.
Yeah, she's a piece of shit. And they beat her up, they kick her. Siobhan is there. She breaks up the fight and just goes off with Aaron.
And people start filming it.
People start filming it, and that's going to come into play in the second episode. And then so Mare is leaving Richard's house, and I like this conversation that they have together too. I want to highlight that also. Their conversation, like, oh, what's the, you wrote this book, and he's like, yeah, you know, it, I wrote this book, and you know, I, that's kind of all I did, you know. He didn't write one after, and he was very like at ease with it. You know, like I like that. And like, they could kind of relate to each other. Like, I hit that shot and people kind of expect something out of me more than what I am. And, you know, he's just kind of an artist who's. I just like that scene because it's like, he's an artist who did something great, but then he puts it into perspective. Like, I did that thing and that's cool. Now I'm a teacher. And it is what it, you know what I mean? Like, he's not, I don't know. I just kind of like that. Would you,
it's a very interesting character that he creates.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder,
because he's still very confident around it.
Yeah. And I just wonder, well, I guess we'll talk about that after we're done with this episode. But so we got a little bit more. So on our way home, Mare spots the creepy prowler guy that looks like a ferret that Miss Carol talked about. I think it might be the guy who killed Aaron. I don't know. She checks it out. She sees a discolored missing Katie Bailey sign that was offering a $10,000 reward, and she covers over it and replaces it with a new one that's now $15,000 for a reward that the Rotary Club was offering. So she gets home, it's around 3:30, has like a little back and forth with her mom. She sees Drew coming out of the bathroom. She puts him to bed, gets in the bed with him.
Very tender,
very sweet. That kid's fucking adorable. And he says to her, I named my turtle Kevin because my dad's name was Kevin. And he asked if his dad liked turtles, and Mare just tells him yes. There's a montage after that. Morning at Frank's house, he kisses his fiance Faye. Siobhan is in bed with her girlfriend, tries to hug her girlfriend. Girlfriend pushes her off. I wonder why.
Isn't she very quick, Mare, in that she sees Kevin's face? When she's putting her son to bed, she falls asleep next to him. And then she sees a face.
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
Not yet. But she does, but not yet. And so then she tries to hug a girlfriend. Girlfriend pushes her off. Frank kisses Faye. Then you go to, you see DJ, Aaron and Dylan's baby crying. over at Dylan's house. Brianna gets pissed off. She's sleeping.
Right, yeah, like they clearly don't want a parent. They have no interest in parenting.
No interest whatsoever. Katie's mom is printing out new flyers. Aaron's dad comes in from somewhere. Take note of that. Smokes a cigarette, goes inside of the house. Then we cut to seeing Aaron's dead body in the creek. And that's the end of the montage. Mare is in bed with Drew. She wakes up, sees an image of her son.
There it is.
That is Kevin. She gets a phone call, and we know that it's them probably telling, you know, the police telling Mayor about Aaron's murder. And blackout, we get this song called Pockets of Light by Lubmeyer Melnick. It's a beautiful song. It's like a 20-minute song. And it's fucking beautiful. So that's the end of the episode. What were your thoughts about? What are your early predictions about who the killer might be?
Oh, I didn't think I really had any early predictions because I felt like they were laying out the land for us. You know what I mean? I feel like it's going to be one of those things where everybody's guilty of something, but it's not necessarily murdering Aaron.
Hopefully not like 13 Reasons Why.
Yeah, I don't think so. I feel like I was just getting the, you know what I mean? They were weaving the blanket for me.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I don't think I think we kind of have more of that on the second episode, I guess. But I was just kind of like, this is when I was like, I gotta do a fucking podcast about this. I gotta hit up Leah and see if she's down. And we're making it happen. Yeah, you got any other thoughts on the first episode?
I mean, I thought it was legitimately perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Perfectly written, perfectly acted. Every character had so much depth. You know what I mean? Everybody has a struggle. Everybody's going to be a little bit wrong. You know what I mean? But you know, you're on Mare's team. You know that she wants to fight for what's right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just felt like I was bated breath for the next one. That's how I felt.
Sure. Yeah. What did you think about that? The moment with like Siobhan and her girlfriend?
I don't think I thought about it.
Okay. Cause I kind of felt like after watching the second episode, I wonder if Siobhan's girlfriend got jealous because she broke up that fight.
Oh, I don't think she got jealous. I don't think it was jealousy.
Okay. All right. Maybe I'm reading too much.
I don't think it was jealousy. But I mean.
What about the dad coming in late?
You know, he obviously does wrong stuff. You know what I mean? He's like got crazy anger issues.
Yeah.
And I think, is it going to be that he's the murderer, or is it going to be that he was doing some other piece of shit thing?
Mm, yeah. Yeah. True.
Do you think he's, you know, my boyfriend immediately was like, I don't trust Guy Pearce. And I don't think it was Guy Pearce.
I don't think it's him either. I think he's just like another, thing for Mare to deal with.
Yeah. Like, and we're learning about her. More layers of her personality through him.
Mm-hmm. Like, cause he's somebody that wants to be nice to her. We find that out.
I mean, nice also for his own gain.
Well, yeah, but he wants to have sex with her and stuff, but I think he genuinely likes her.
Well, yeah, but I mean also like he's getting stuff out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, of course. I guess that's what a relationship is.
But I know, but I mean, what genuinely likes her, like he just met her and they had intercourses. So, I mean, it's like he's, you know, he's into her.
Yeah.
Whether or not he's going to support her as a human is yet to be seen.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Fair enough. Because we kind of see in the second episode 2, Fathers. Yeah. What's up?
This may or may not need to be in the podcast, but I just wanted to a little story about macaroni and cheese. From a box.
Okay.
I wasn't allowed to eat it growing up. You know, my parents are hippies. so I couldn't have any processed foods.
Okay.
And we had a garden, you know what I mean? That kind of a thing. And then, so I had a babysitter who, when my parents would bring her, when I would have her, she would let me eat Kraft macaroni and cheese. And it was, I would look forward to it with wild abandon because it was just, I loved the orange. You know what I mean? I was like, get the box out. And I loved how like you put the fake cheese, the powder and, and then every time I would eat it, I would throw up later because
you ate so much.
I ate the whole box. And then also like, if you don't eat like food like that, your body can't take a whole box at once. You know what I mean? It's like, what are you doing? You've been eating carob, you know what I mean? And beet greens. but I really had a romantic relationship with Kraft macaroni and cheese.
Oh, cool. Okay. Everybody's got something. All right, cool. I'm leaving that in.
But my, like, that's because it's not like how like my grandma makes macaroni and cheese.
No,
like,
it's not the same.
Noodles, and then they were in the oven, and it was like, whereas like you knew you were doing something dirty when you ate.
Yeah, yeah. You knew you were going down the across the, what is it, the bats, the wrong side of the tracks.
Yeah, wrong side. Now it's just like, I had a hard month. I didn't get up on a lot of spots. We're eating boxed macaroni. But at the time I was like, we are living life.
That's funny. I'm trying to think what I liked that much as a kid. This has all been the same shit, pizza and cheeseburgers. My nemesis today, as it always has been.
Well, I mean, those are two great foods.
It's the best. Oh, my God.
We live right next to an In-N-Out, and I never had it.
Oh, never?
I do. I had it my first time last week.
I had it in San Francisco, but it wasn't the same because it was like an outdoor kind. And it wasn't like a standalone. It was okay.
My Nana and Pop-Up, which is my father's parents, which were like extreme, I was extremely close with, they had like a relationship with, first it was Burger, they, all of the fast food, well, Burger King, McDonald's and Wendy's. And they would always, he'd always go get it. And then she would, they would each get a burger and then they would get one shake and the chili, and then they would split it, and then they'd always be like, gotta cool yourself down to get warm again. So they'd have like the chili and then have a and I like they're, I don't know, they were just so, it was so cute how they like split their
food,
their, what, you know what I mean, and they knew what each other wanted, and they'd get the chili, and then he'd be like, you know, your Nana always likes to cool it down after. It was just
the and frosty
they would, they, yeah, the frosty, they would drove across America, and they, the way they explained America to me was all of their favorite McDonald's stops.
That seems like I would love them.
They were really fantastic. And I mean, they recognized the difference in different McDonald's. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, they were just top of the pops. I love them so much.
I think when I was
Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. All right. What part?
Bucks County.
Okay.
Inside Philly.
I did a show near there at like some, the Newton Theater. That's like not far from there. When I was 12, 13, I got my wisdom teeth pulled and three extra teeth that were coming.
Oh, wow.
They were like seven. So a total of 17.
Oh, wow.
And they were all impacted, which means that they weren't. And it was brutal. And my dad would take me to, would get Wendy's Frosties for me because that was like all I could. It was so good.
Oh, but, yes. But I want one so bad right now.
Oh, my God.
Just to imagine what you were going through with your teeth.
It was brutal. All right. Well, we'll get to episode two. I'm leaving that shit in. Let's do episode two, Fathers. So this is the aftermath of everybody finding out. Well, we just find out that Aaron's been killed. Mare is driving out. It continues from the last episode. Mare's driving to the crime scene at Creedom Creek, and it's confirmed that Aaron was murdered. The captain tells her that another detective, Colin Zabel, is being sent down because he had to call the county to get some help. And he's kind of like a young upstart because he solved a cold case from a missing 10-year-old. And Mare is not pleased. She's pissed about that.
And he's like, what do you expect me to do about it? Like, yeah. I just have to.
He's like, I told you last episode that
Everybody at home watching remembers that I told you this was coming.
Right. I have to. My hands are tied. So she calls Lori to tell her about Aaron because her husband, John, is one of Kenny's cousins. Billy is also one of his cousins. And they meet over at Kenny's house to tell Kenny the news of Aaron's murder. Kenny is overcome with grief. Mayor goes upstairs to look in Aaron's room, for clues, and finds the brochure for the baby's ear operation. And she clocks that. And Kenny knows, he for some reason knows that Dylan killed Aaron. Your thoughts on this first part of this first quarter of the show, of the episode?
Okay. Yes, I'm switching out my antidepressants, so I'm a little mentally unbalanced right now. But that scene ripped my fucking heart out. I just thinking about it, because, you know, she like calls them the brothers to be like this horrible, you know what I mean? And the faces, and they're all waiting outside, and you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, they all knock on the door, and of course he knows something's wrong. Mm-hmm. All three of them are there. You know what I mean? And then she does a great job. She like tells him, right, you know, she doesn't fucking beat around the bush. She just gives him the facts. And then he, as many people do, processes his obvious devastation with rage.
Yes.
And you're just like, you know what I mean? Because it's like it's like an acting. You're like, am I watching real life?
Yeah. It reminds me of that scene in Mystic River when Sean Penn finds out his daughter's dead. He's like, is that my daughter?
Just another destroys you.
Yeah. Yeah. He was great. That was it's a great performance. Shit. If I
had there were like a few scenes. I can't wait to talk about how many scenes there were.
Yeah.
This one also had a little more humor, thank God, because it was like going from scene to scene that tore your heart out.
Patrick Murney plays Kenny McMenamin. That's
the dad.
Yeah, the dad, yeah.
You know he's shiesty, but I felt like that was, I mean, he's, you know.
Something's going on. Because she asked him, you know, were you here all night? And he's like, yeah. And then they do like this cut to Billy, the other cousin. And he's like, kind of like makes a little bit of a face. Because like we said, you know, like we said at the end in that montage, he's outside. And he's like, he falls asleep in his chair. It's just kind of like, I don't know. He's up to something, but
there's something untoward, but it's not necessarily Aaron.
Right. It's probably doesn't
have. Well, they had a bad relationship. I mean, not, I'm not say bad, problematic. Like, he would, you know.
Yeah.
So that's how I felt about that scene.
Okay. Yeah.
I also felt like it reiterated how good she is at her job. She knows, before she leaves the crime scene, she like sets everybody up to do.
Yeah.
She immediately is like, I'm gonna talk to the family. She's gonna deal with a horrible, hard thing to do. She gets everybody there. She gives them the info. She asks them the questions.
And how about Julianne, my crush, Julianne Nicholson, the way that she handled that scene? She's like bantering with her daughter, and she gets the call. She's like, man, and you could just see it on her face. It's not overplayed. It's not overplayed. It's just pitch perfect. Aaron's dead.
Yeah, it was so perfect. Your girlfriend knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, my married.
That's when I started crying.
Yeah, my married girlfriend has knocked it out of the park.
Well, I have boyfriends that are married that I refer to as my boyfriends.
Oh, cool. Well, y'all can kind of get away with that. Women can get away with that.
Well, you can too. I mean, they're not like people. You know what I mean? They're just, you know, people that we're really invested in.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. And then we just leave that scene with, he knows that Dylan did it. That's what he thinks. So we get another scene. Frank, Helen, and Siobhan visit Carrie, who is Drew's mother, and she's a recovering drug addict staying at like a halfway house. And basically in that scene, she tells them that she's filing for custody, and Siobhan Siobhan tells her that Mare's going to fight it. And Carrie's like, no shit. And Carrie is Sosie Bacon's, Kevin Bacon's kid. Did you know that?
Oh, no, yeah. I didn't. Another incredible actor.
Yeah.
What I love about this writing is, you know, the way we learn things, you know, yes. It's not like the way they give us details, mm-hmm. You know, because we all knew there was something about her having the kid, you know what I mean? And
right.
now we get this, but it's not like beating us over the head with setup. It just comes out in the conversation.
Yeah. Like we assume things. Sometimes that gets confirmed. And then
she has that great line where they're like, where are you living? She's at a halfway house called Rebirth. And then she has a line that's like, as if we were all dead before. And then you see on the faces of the grandma and the sister, you know what I mean? I feel like they were like, it was a reminder that Kevin is dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like no line is wasted.
Right. Right. It's so good. So that's the setup and like, yeah, we don't want, and I immediately was like, I don't want Drew with you.
Oh yeah. But then she's like, I'm the mother and you do sort of, but you know, here's obviously I'm always going to be on Mara's side. She's looking for turtles. You know what I mean?
Yeah. She's invested.
She's invested, but you immediately know it's going to be a thing.
Yeah. So we get the press conference about Aaron McMenamin's murder at the police station. Mayor informs the press about what happened. They ask if the press asks if the case of Katie and Aaron are related, and they don't know about that yet. Then Dawn pipes up and she complains about them not finding her daughter. The chief tells them that they've got a county detective that's been assigned to the case. And they're like, about time. And
then they start a chant.
They start chanting. And then Mayor turns around, walks into the police station.
Which a lot of me, you know, me as like a person who likes to smooth out situations is like, oh, is she ever going to be agreeable in this way where like people understand how hard that she works? Mm-hmm. But then also you're like, she doesn't give a fuck. She's doing her job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you really appreciate it, but then you also see how she's like stubbing her own toe. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right. Yeah, she is. And then she's back in the office in the police department. She meets Colin.
right away is like, so he also nails the accent.
Yeah, he's poking around looking in her office and she's like, excuse me. And he's like, oh, can't bad habit, you know. And he introduces himself. Mayor is not pleased. And they're like, how do we start this? And she's like, we start with a 10-minute cigarette break. So she goes out and vapes behind the police department.
And he's immediately like young.
Young guy.
He's got like that sort of like.
Yeah.
What's this word since they can't see us at home?
The get up and go. The,
yeah, he's like. that's right.
The how pizzazz.
Do you do that? I don't know. If
yeah.
I don't even know who that is, actually. So I don't know if that's what
it's Evan Peters, who they say has been in American Horror Story. People liked him in that. Most recently, he was in WandaVision on Disney Plus. I liked him in that.
He's nailing this.
Yeah, he's like he's going to be like a big.
He's such a nice juxtaposition to her.
Yeah.
His energy.
That's how it always is, like a by the books got kind of guy and a somebody who versus someone who's like a little more plays more jazz than most. Yes. You know? So
but also we don't know yet what he's going to be like. We just know that he's got pulling the friendly upbeat card.
Yeah. And he solved this case that nobody could solve. So he's a detective on the rise. So now we cut to a church scene where Deacon Mark is giving a homily about somebody that lost their boyfriend and he's comparing it to Aaron's murder. And he gives a homily. You see Mrs. Carroll in there, you see Beth, probably see some more people, but I noticed Mrs. Carroll and I noticed Beth in there, Beth Hanlon. And after the mass, Father Dan is helping them out. He's helped out on them with the mass, and he's asking Deacon Mark, you know, oh, what did you know? Aaron says, yeah, she was. Deacon Mark says, yeah, she was in the youth group, but she quit after she had the baby. And we really didn't talk that much after the baby was born because she left. And then Father Dan walks out, and the faces that a lot of these actors are making is like, are you fucking guilty? Did you have something to do with
it? Yeah, there was a really weird moment in that with the two of them standing there. And I immediately did not trust the deacon.
Yeah.
I got bad vibes. Mm-hmm. I also, like, I grew up in the church. And either he's negligent and you feel bad. Like, the one side of me was like, oh, he must feel guilty that he didn't follow up with her. Maybe he had been there. But then I was like, I never attended a church group where people didn't follow up with me. Do you know what I mean? They are following up. They want you to come back. They're trying to take care of the, you know, the people who might need help. You know what I mean?
Right.
I just didn't believe that. Oh, you lost track of her? That's not really... So it's either he feels guilty, which was initially I was like, oh, he must feel bad. But then I was like, no, I don't feel too good about you.
Yeah, something don't seem right. It just does not seem right at all. And I was just kind of like, yeah, you probably, because in the third, like the trailer for the teaser for the next episode, he had problems at another parish.
Oh, I didn't watch the teasers because I hate it.
I'm so obsessed with this show. Any other, like with like WandaVision or the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I was like, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see anything. But this, I'm like, every little bit.
No, I can see why. I just am like, I want it now.
Yeah, yeah. Because he was at a previous parish and maybe there's something that happened to make him go. It reminded me of Doubt, if you remember that movie.
I didn't watch Doubt.
It's very good. It's based on a play. It's fucked up, but you know.
I remember what it was about.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but they're laying the thing that like literally anybody could have. Everybody's done something, but we don't know what it is.
I just don't trust anybody. I don't trust anybody now. Just the faces that they make at the end of the scene. They're like,
yeah, you're like, what was that face?
He's like, yeah, I just didn't talk to her anymore. I ain't talked to her no more after that. Just like, okay, motherfucker, what are you doing?
Yeah, something's amiss.
So back at the police station, they get a tip about the Instagram video of Brianna punching Aaron. They notice that Siobhan, like one of the desk clerks or something, is informing Mayor as she's walking to the office, and Colin is already looking at the video, and they're like, whoa, who was that? They see the punch. They see you're getting beat up. And they see Siobhan. They're like, who's that? Who's that other girl? And like, that's, and one of the desk clerks was like, that's
her daughter.
That's her daughter. That's Mayor's daughter, Siobhan. And Siobhan and Mayor's like, what the? She's like, really? You didn't tell me about this? Like, you knew? That's running in her head.
You see it running on her face too. Yeah. Well, she immediately wants, well, you go ahead. I'm jumping.
No, but that, go ahead.
But isn't that where she's like, let's get a warrant for Brianna?
Yes. And they're like, let's get a warrant. And she gets in her car.
It's a great scene.
She gets in her car and she's like calling Siobhan, can't get her. She's not picking up. Then I always want to say Evan. Colin knocks on her door. It's like, hey, I don't know if we're supposed to be, if I'm following you or if we're carpooling it. What's going on here? And she's like, just get in. And as he's like trying to buckle his seatbelt up, she pulls off. She pulls out. She doesn't want him to be there.
It's very funny because he also knows that she's leaving, but he presents it in like a very pragmatic, I'm happy to meet you there. You just got to give me the address. You know what I mean? And
right, she's like, right. Oh, did we get the, no, we didn't get to the, we're good. I thought I missed something, but I didn't. So they go to Brianna's job, to the restaurant, and they're like, you know, hey, and Colin is like, hey, you know, should we be doing this, should we just do this outside? She's like, no, He's like, do you know these people? She's like, yeah. Are you friends with them all? She's like, yeah, yeah. And she said, I just wonder, where's Brianna? They go get her. She cuffs her. Brianna's like, what the fuck is going on? What's going on? Her dad comes out. What's going on? He doesn't know who Colin is. I don't know who you are. What the fuck is going on? The mother is going crazy. They take her away.
Colin's trying to like minimize collateral damage.
Yeah, he's trying to like settle everything.
But she doesn't. Mara doesn't care. She's like, she beat her up in front of people. I'm going to do this in front of people.
Probably mad that Siobhan didn't say anything to her. So that's probably, she's probably carrying that in there too. Just fucking, this is Emmy Award, an Emmy Award worthy performance. Like already in episode two. As soon as Kate Winslet said overdose, I was like, she needs to win. give her all the things as Black Twitter says. So great scene. Brianna, next scene is Brianna getting questioned at the police office. She continues to ask for a lawyer. Mayor keeps ignoring her, peppering her with questions until Colin's like, yo, what the fuck is going on here? What have I gotten myself into?
Yeah, he's like, we gotta get her. He's obviously uncomfortable with the rule breaking. He's like, she wants a lawyer.
He's like, Detective Sergeant, Sarge, come on. Until Brianna breaks and calls her a bitch and says, no wonder your son fucking killed himself. And Mare is stopped in her tracks and she's like, this bitch, basically talking about my dead son. And that's how we find out what happens to Kevin, what had happened. That's how we found out. And that's brilliant writing.
And I feel like we're all a little bit, it's funny about Colin. It's when they say it fast, it sounds like Colin's able. So I always wanted to like make it into one, but I felt like we're all sort of him right there where he's watching this. And then he's like, I need someone to come in here.
Absolutely. Yes. He is us. He's like, yo, chill.
And then he's like, what?
He's like, can we get somebody in here to process? Can we just get somebody in here to process her? Oh, my God. So Mare is blown. She's about to leave. And Jan at the desk.
She doesn't respond, which I think
she doesn't respond. She didn't slap the shit out of her.
She keeps a lid on it.
Yeah, definitely. Good. Very great poise by Mare. She's about to leave the police department, and then Jan tells her that she's got some flowers. Very beautiful bouquet. They're from Richard. He says, I never got your phone number in the message, and she calls him, and he invites her out to this party to celebrate the anniversary of his novel. She says, no, I got a lot of stuff going on, and he's like, oh, I heard about the killing. They're lucky to have you. And that softens her a little bit. And she's like, all right, where's the party? All right. And she agrees to go.
I think it really nicely shows like this sort of, as she so rejects human interaction or like wanting to coddle people or make people see things from her point of view or make herself likable to them, even if it would work in her benefit. In that moment when he says, as you said, he's officer, he's like, they're lucky to have you, and then she's like, oh man, you know what I mean? She's like, I'm going, you know. Yeah, so you like, see that side of her, that's that other side.
Yeah, it's like, fuck it, I'll go. She's opening up to him a little bit. So she goes home, she sees Helen, they have a little exchange. She tells her that they saw Carrie. And I think she asked her, did she ask about custody? She says no.
Yeah, she lies.
She lies to her. And
you're just like, why is everybody lying? Like, yeah, of course she's going to find out.
They're afraid that she's going to explode. You know, maybe she's their version of Kenny. You know? But Helen does tell her that Drew keeps doing that eye blinking thing. And Mare, yeah, so that's what we get from that, is like the eye blinking thing. So then that triggers Mare to go over to Frank's. She has an exchange with Faye, kind of nice.
Which is the new
fiance, Frank's fiance. And they talk about going to the therapist to talk about Drew, like the doctor. And then Mare's walking away. Mare says, okay, I'll go see her. I'll go see the doctor tomorrow. And she's walking away. Then Frank's like, hey, what I heard about Aaron. And again, brilliant writing. We find out that Frank's a teacher. He says, oh, did you know her? He's like, no, I taught her algebra, but you know, she's real quiet. I never had, you know, any conversations with her, but I could tell that things were bad at home. And then Mare walks away, and then he makes a face that's like, like, what are you hiding, Frank?
Yeah. Also, anytime a guy says, oh, I didn't know her, the same with the deacon.
Yeah.
They're like, I don't believe that in a small town.
Right.
When she was actually in your class.
Yeah.
That you didn't have more interactions than that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and also, you know that stuff's bad at home, but you don't know her.
Yeah, dude. What the fuck is his name from The Office? It's David Denman. What was his name on that fucking show? He was
Pam. That is him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because I was like, oh my God, I realized it in that scene. And then I IMDb'd it. And then maybe I IMDb'd the wrong dude because I was like, that's not him?
I'm just like, I'm trying to find his name. God, people are yelling at their phones right now because they know his name. That's
but also, that scene.
Roy from The Office. Yeah.
That scene is another scene where you see them managing fairly well to co-parent. They're obviously
kids'
needs. And she is too. You can see she's hot tempered and that she doesn't want to placate people in any way. But here she's like, I want to do the right thing. You know what I mean? And they're not aggressive. When it comes to kids, you see another solid co-parenting scene.
And they're not being petty. Yeah. They're not being petty. Mm-hmm. Really seems to be a good relationship. That's gonna change in next episode. So
I love this next scene when she's getting dressed.
Yes. Okay. She's in her bedroom. Wait a minute. Not yet. Wait a minute. Not yet. I don't think.
Every time you say it, I feel like we're in Gladiator, where Russell Crowe's like, not yet.
Oh shit. No, we're not there yet. We're not there yet. I know I wrote that. We're not there yet. We're not. Okay. But we're going to talk about it. So Mare's in her bedroom looking over Katie's files. She hears Siobhan come in and she confronts her about not telling her that she saw Aaron on the night that she died. And she's like, look, you got to tell me what's going on. She said, you know, look, I broke up the fight. I walked her away and I tried to see if she needed a ride home. She said no. And she just disappeared in the Sharp's woods. And that was the last
time.
She
did actually say in the scene that she didn't say anything.
Oh, yeah. She didn't say anything.
In the next scene, she says no.
Okay.
Which is, I think immediately you think, oh, this girl probably feels guilty.
She feels guilty about it. Oh, she that definitely like, feels guilty.
Even before the next scene, that's what I immediately thought.
And then Mare tells her, hey, you know, you're going to be questioned about this tomorrow. You know, you're going to be questioned about this by somebody that's not me, basically inferring that it's a conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
So like she doesn't, you know, whatever, you know, conflict of interest. We know what the deal is. And weird that she didn't answer her phone. And maybe what do you think that relationship is? Just give me your thoughts on is it just like a teenage daughter dealing with her mom? Just like, my mom's not cool. My dad's the good cop.
I think there's going to be more to unfold there.
Mm-hmm.
Like either she's had to be responsible, you know, maybe we'll find out that when Kevin got killed himself, that she had to be responsible. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're probably responsible for Drew.
Yeah, either there was like some kind of relation or something else is going on as well that we don't know.
Right.
But it also is interesting in that scene that Kate Winslet doesn't take, she's angry with her,
yeah,
but she doesn't ask her, are you okay?
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Good point. Good point.
She's not like, yeah, her daughter did break up a fight and stand yeah. up to this girl and was there, you know, and then Kate Winslet never asks her if she's okay.
She could have said good job for breaking that up.
Yeah, there was no sort of mother. There was the anger that she is her daughter and didn't tell mm-hmm. her, but there was no, and I think probably in that it is a protective thing that she's like, yeah. where were you? I didn't know what was going on. But there was no vulnerability in that way of being like, are you all right? So also yeah. I think that Siobhan is carrying that with her.
Not even I'm proud of you for breaking it up, you know?
Yeah, good for you for being a stand-up citizen.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. That's real. Yeah, it's interesting. I can't, I'm, because it's almost like this cast is so deep that it's like, you got some super talented people in this cast, so you kind of want to see them all get to eat. You know, but in the trailer, she is hugging Siobhan. So we don't know in one, you know, what's going to happen. There's going to be some stuff uncovered, like you said. So the next day, Mare meets with the therapist, the doctor to talk about Drew.
And no, didn't we go to the party first?
No.
Mm-mm. Oh, that's the next day. Oh, my God. So yeah. sorry. Oh, my God. This scene destroys
this is
me.
This is the scene that. Everything like we find out about why she is the way she is for the most part.
And you also find out that Kate Winslet is one of the best actresses that ever has walked the face of the earth.
Yeah. This cements her Golden Globe. So Mare meets with this therapist doctor to talk about Drew. And we find out more about her son, Kevin, who had some of the same tics when he was a kid 2 years prior. He killed himself. You know, it's been 2 years since he killed himself. And Mare and Frank are wondering if it's hereditary. And he did have Tourette's. Kevin did have Tourette's, had a developmental disorder. He was on the autism spectrum, which and this is something that caused Frank and Mare to argue. Probably one of the reasons they broke up. Probably they broke up after he killed himself. And the doctor says, you know, it's not really a big deal because with boys, they may have these tics, but they eventually shed them and it's not a big deal anymore. And then she just suggests that they need to take him to a neurologist. And then after they close that, she's like, hey, have you seen anybody? You need to talk to somebody. And as we find out this, you know, Mare is laying all of this out, she starts to tear up and you see that vulnerability and you see a lot of the stuff that she's holding. You know, we see it in the first episode, but the onion gets peeled back another layer in this scene. I think this is probably one of the best scenes in the show so far. I think I want to mark this as one of the best scenes in the show so far.
Oh, it really hit deep because yeah. you see like some guilt, like she says, you know, they her son got all these different diagnoses and they couldn't mm-hmm. figure out what was wrong. And
yeah.
she says, like, my husband handled more of it. And she says, I couldn't handle it after a while, that I couldn't figure him out. I couldn't help him.
Right.
And you can tell she's holding that guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And then
partly, yeah, and another thing I want to highlight, what you just said, holding that guilt, and Frank did all that stuff. She's like, Frank did it all. Frank handled all of that, and she was kind of removed from it in a lot of ways, too.
Yeah, so that, I think, spoke to their, as you were saying, their relationship, his parenting, and a little bit of what's eating away at her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that scene was terrific. I love that scene. So she goes back to the police department. Colin is there and he thinks, hey, look, we need to reset this.
This is also one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah.
It's so nice coming after that one that was so sad.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, we need to reset this. Look, I am you're the chef, I'm the sous chef. I want to work together. Teamwork makes the dream work. And she rolls her eyes and she's like, oh, come on.
He goes, I want to reset this. And she's like, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then this thus begins the montage of them interviewing the kids that were at the park that night. They interview over 40 kids.
Great montage.
It's fucking great. And some, I think one of the kids said, she's a bitch, or
yeah.
I think somebody said like Brianna's a piece of shit.
That's her daughter's girlfriend.
Who's
with the hat?
Siobhan's girlfriend. Yeah. 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 And we know that Jess, the best, Aaron's best friend, is interviewed. She doesn't know anything. We know she does, but she doesn't know. She's holding a big joker that we will reveal later on, because we don't get, we're not there yet. And then we get to Siobhan. Colin interviews Siobhan. We talked about her feeling guilty about leaving Aaron there. And he says, it's not your fault. No need to feel guilty. You know, it's fine. And she asked, Siobhan asked him, Colin, how do you like working with my mom? And he's like, it's all right. You got any tips? She says, lower your expectations.
Yeah. I was like, oh man.
Yeah.
So you just want to stick up for Mare again. You're like, she's working hard.
Yeah. It's just, I think it's some shit that we don't know. And then how much of it is like teenage daughter, mom conflict. Did you ever have that when you were a kid?
Oh yeah. My mom and I went hard at each other.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's
the nature of mother daughter relationships, but I also think there's some shit we don't know.
And you know what? And I kind of want to go back to something I glossed over a little bit in the first episode when she comes home with the tank, and immediately Mare's like, Siobhan, help Drew with this tank. And then you hear Drew, Siobhan, he's so adorable, but it's like, Siobhan. And she's like, oh my God, I'm going to help you with it. Chill. She was still sweet to the kid, but it was like, she's probably raising him more than anybody is to a certain degree.
Yeah. I think she's probably taking on a lot of responsibility for stuff. Yeah.
And I think she probably harbors a little resentment, and rightfully so too, because it's not her kid. But families do what they have to do. And
My guess is that we're going to find out that Mara went off the tracks.
When
her son killed herself.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And then Siobhan probably had to hold it together. I mean, just, you know, guesses.
I believe that you're right. Okay. So Mara, this is your scene. Mara goes home to get ready for Richard's party. And she's looking for something to wear. She's looking for lipstick. She's got hair in her lipstick.
Yeah, her lipstick is like old and cracked. Like that's how long it's been. It's like this interesting thing where it's like keeping herself like, you know, she just is sort of like this sort of her that's like dressing up more, you know what I mean? And then there's hair in the lipstick. It's just right. So funny.
Yeah. And she's trying to find a dress. I thought she was going to go into Siobhan's room to get some lipstick or something. I thought that was going to be the next cut, like, you know, but she ends up looking good.
She looks great.
She's Kate Winslet of, you know, and, but I love how, like, I think I always thought Kate Winslet was beautiful, but this is like what I'm saying. Like, you know, I think the first time I really noticed her being hot was Little Children. And it was like from 2006. And, I was like, oh, she's hot. But now it's just like, ooh, it's like she's just so like she's, I don't know, because I like assertive women like that, you know? And it's like they want to be with you because they want to be with you. They don't need you.
Right.
You know what I mean? They just want to be with you because they like you, you know. Anyway, enough about me. she goes out.
Who would Chris date? In this series,
in Mare of Easttown, I think Lori would probably be more of my speed if she dated black dudes. I don't know. Okay, so she finds an outfit. She looks great. She's going out to her truck. Then we see Brianna's dad, Tony Delarosso, pulls up. Then another car pulls up, and he's in the company restaurant van. And Tony's wife pulls up and he's trying to confront Mare about, hey, what are you doing? You're doing this to my daughter. You're trying to ruin her life.
He's coming like, in real close.
Yeah. Like, get out of my face. Like, what are you doing? Go home. He's pissed. And Helen comes out and Mayor pulls off. Tony's wife pulls off. I mean, Tony pulls off. And then Mrs. De La Rosso is crying. Helen tells her to come in, just come inside. That's how it's like, you know, it's like
a real, small, like, town.
Small town. Everybody knows each other.
She's like, just get in here.
Get in here. Calm yourself down.
It's also such an interesting scene to see how Mare is like very like, here's this man yelling in her face at her home. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, go home.
Yeah.
Don't do this. Like, you know, like she's not overreact. Not that it would be overreacting. Like a person mm-hmm. could get very angry and be like, you know, and she's very direct, like get yeah. fuck off. But she's not yeah. like, she's not getting thrown. She's not ruffled by like a man. He's like right up on her, you know? Mm-hmm. And she's just like, maybe inside but she's very, very collected.
Yeah. And it comes up again. So she finally gets to the party. She's offered some duck liver pate. Well, first of all, she gets to the party, and this is where Richard fucks up.
Oh, he fucks up big.
Richard sees her. He's talking to some women. They love him, and he loves that the women love him.
He loves it.
And he's just basking in all this. But your lady that you asked to come see you is right there. And he just looks up, acknowledges her, doesn't go over to her.
Goes right back to the lady circle.
Right back to getting that love. She gets off. She goes to sit down. She gets herself a drink. She goes to sit down. Server asks her if she wants some duck liver pate. Mare takes it, tastes it, hates it, spits it out into her napkin and hides it in the couch.
I love that so much.
Because it's not Cheez-Its and it's not Cheese Whiz over a cheese puff.
I wanted to give Richard a moment. I thought maybe, oh, he'd come right over, because yeah. sometimes, like, as comics, we know, like, you're talking to the people who, you know, showed up for you. You know what yeah. I mean? So you're working. It looks right. like maybe you're like flirting or whatever, but you're working. So
he's working the room.
I wanted to give him that beat. You know,
it's
what I
his
mean?
Night. Yeah.
Yeah, it's his you're night. Right. But he didn't. He should have come over sooner than she shouldn't have been able to get a drink and put liver pate, duck pate into the couch. Like he should have come over and been like, I got to work the room.
I wonder if I was Richard, would I just see her and just be like, come, you know, I don't know. I probably would have just been like motioned her over.
I think I would have been like, excuse me to the ladies. I would have gone over and I would be like, thank you for coming. You look hot as hell.
Yeah.
Get yourself a drink. I got to work the room.
Yeah.
I feel like
I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah. A woman like Mare gets work. She respects work. So she would get, oh, I'm working the room, but she needs
to know, needs
to acknowledge.
Yeah. He fucked up.
I like that.
Like, go over to her. Oh my God, you look so great. I'm so happy you're here. Kiss her on the cheek. Get a drink. I'll be over in a bit. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. That's what he should have did.
He ignored her, essentially. He ignored her.
Mare walks out. She's like, fuck this. And I'm leaving. He chases her out. She's already got the valet, the car, her truck's pulled up. She's about to leave. He, you know, tells her he was wrong and apologizes. She gets out of the car. Like, she's so easily moved by this dude. I think almost not easily, but just more than most people in her life. I don't want this to bite her in the ass. I hope he's good for her.
I don't trust him, but I think it shows to her, like with that scene with the lipstick, like her wanting to have this other thing that she mm-hmm. is pushing down so much in all the other scenes.
Yeah. I want to believe that this is a complication. That's like, this is an opportunity for you to be happy, to be the gateway to your happiness. But it's, I got this murder. I got my daughter-in-law one in custody. I got this other shit and I got these cases, but it's like, you're the complication because this might not be the right timing. You know what I mean? Not because you fucking killed somebody, you know what I mean?
Or you just solipsistic. I don't trust a series such as this to give me any, you know, sunrises. So I feel like except for some sort of self-forgiveness, you know, like characters. But I feel like I just don't trust him. Not because of, but because I'm like, you know, I would love that.
Yeah.
Do I feel like that is plausible? I don't know.
That's what I'm hoping. And if this, you know, it's like the shows that we talk about us liking, these detective shows that are dark and bleak, in the these BBC shows where it's like, yeah, if this were a BBC show, maybe. And then like, it's almost like, because this is an American series, it's like, maybe there's hope. But The Undoing was pretty fucking bleak too. But that was like, kind of like, did you watch it?
Yeah, I did.
I was in episode 3, I think. Yeah, but it briefly. But anyway, there was just like,
I'm going to rewatch episode 3. I get so excited when I see you in things.
It's really quick. You hear my voice and it's like, yeah, it's spent
really cool.
It's still great. No, it's amazing, you know, but it's like, I spent all day. Anyway, enough about me. I just kind of, I want that for her because I like her so much.
Yeah, me too. I want that for her, which is, I don't want to want it for her because I don't want to have my heart broken.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that he's just like a love interest. That's all. And not a fucking murderer. Okay.
Or even just like a piece of shit who's not a murderer.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. And then she just says, you know, like, he's sorry. She says, look, you're not getting laid. So he's not. So then we
get, her directness is very lovable.
Yeah. It's like, you're not getting laid. Like, all right. Okay. Fuck. So Kenny, so the next scene, Kenny escapes his house from his cousins, basically goes looking for Dylan. While Dylan does the same thing, tries to escape his house to get cigarettes. His Dylan's parents are like, hey, you shouldn't be leaving. He's like, I didn't do it. So I don't give a shit and I'm going to do what I want to do. He goes to the gas station. His parents don't think it's a good idea. And he's waited on by Dawn. Dawn works at the gas station. And he gets his cigarette. She's staring at him. He's like, are you going to ring me up or are you going to take care of me? Or you're just going to stare at me. And she rings him up. He leaves, gets back into his truck, which is a really nice Ford Bronco.
Really nice.
What year is that? I tried to look it up. Is it just like a refurbished, remodeled?
Because it's real shiny.
Yeah.
You know, those older ones are like kind of like a matte.
Yeah. It's like, you can fucking pay for that $1,800.
How are you paying for that? And you can't pay for the kids' ears. I also thought that.
Yeah. Interesting.
Because they're not leasing cars in Pennsylvania. You know, we lease in cities. He bought that.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice truck.
Real nice.
Yeah.
And it's shiny.
Yeah. It's like, you can't pay for somebody can help you pay for that shit. Anyway. So he goes to his truck. Kenny's waiting for him in the back seat. They don't lock their doors in East Town.
Ugh. And you knew it right away by the camera angle.
Yeah, the great camera work. This show is just impeccable. He's got a gun. Kenny's got a gun. And he pulls a gun on him and tells him to drive to the turnpike. Which, I had to rewind. Oh, go ahead.
I mean, why would you do that? You're going to leave the primary location. You're better off getting out of the car and running around in circles. You're going to drive away with, you know what I mean?
Yeah. He's like, I didn't kill your daughter. I didn't kill your daughter.
I mean, I say that and no one's ever been in the back of my car. I'm sure you panic, but like, you're going to be worse off the further away you get from people that you know.
Yep. So they pull off. They unknowingly pass Mare, who's going to fill up at the same gas station that just left. She was going to fill up outside with her card and the machine is broken. And she goes inside. She sees Dawn, acknowledges Dawn. Then she goes to the back. She puts 40 on the tank, whatever tank that was.
Nicely layered because she sees fucking
Tony,
the asshole. And she's like, oh, and then she sees Dawn and she's like, she's just getting hit everywhere.
Yeah. It's just like, God damn. And
but she doesn't walk away. She just walks into it.
Yeah. She's not afraid. And she goes to the cooler section, the drink section. I guess she gets a Rolling Rock. I don't know, because she's drinking one later, but I don't know. Who cares? Tony's behind her being all creepy and shit.
Real tight behind her.
Real up on her. Reminds me of Trump being over Hillary.
That's exactly what I thought of. Yeah. That's exactly what I thought of too. I was like, that's what that is. Yeah. I almost feel like when they did that scene, they were like, that's what we want you to feel.
Yeah. Trying to intimidate her. And she goes, she pays for her stuff. She goes and then she walks out. And then Don steps in front of Tony and he's like, Don tells him first to leave her alone. Leave her alone, Tony. He's like, are you defending her? You're defending her. And they have a moment. That was a nice moment. I like that. Even though they were clashing, Don was like, this is my friend. She stands in front of the door after Mayor leaves and she gets followed home again. Then we cut to Jess, Aaron's best friend. She's in her room crying. We're almost done here. Jess is in the room crying. Her mom comes in and says, I know it's hard.
We know she's got something she's sitting on.
She's holding a Joker and she tells her something. And then that prompts them to go over to Lori's. Then we cut, I believe we cut back to Kenny and.
Yep.
We cut back to Kenny and Dylan. They drive to the turnpike. They're in the woods.
They drive off the turnpike clearly because they're on a back road.
Drive off into a back road. Dylan runs and said, I didn't kill your daughter. He's like, I didn't kill her. I'm a kid. And he runs away and Kenny shoots at him twice. Dylan falls. We don't know if he's dead. Mare goes back home trying to enjoy her hoagie. She sees a letter on the table in the living room. And she sees a letter from Delaware County and it's, we later find out that it's Frank's summon regarding custody of Drew. She goes to sit down and a gallon of milk is thrown through her window because it's from Tony because Tony bought a gallon of milk at the gas station. So he used that gallon of milk to throw through her window.
Comes right behind her. She gets glass on her.
And we know it's her because they see his truck pull away. The Del Rosso's restaurant truck driving away. Siobhan comes running in the room and she says she asked what was that and she said that was an angry scared father and then we cut back to
well it's very interesting because she sits back down after the milk comes through
and just shakes
the glass off and it's like gonna go back and eat her hoagie, you know what I mean?
And for the real nerds, it's he threw a gallon of Swiss dairy pure whole milk at her.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah. And so then we get, you know, we get that Jess and her mom, they're over Lori's house. And this is, I want to ask you about this after I finish this. It's back over to Lori's house. And she explains to Lori that Aaron told her. Oh, shoot. Hold on. Oh my God, come on. I just got this new computer. I'm going to scroll up. She tells Lori that Aaron had told her this secret that Dylan was not DJ's father. And she thinks it's Frank's kid. And that's not why does she not tell the police that?
Because Frank is ex-husband of Mayor. And I think she's afraid to tell her. So she brought it to somebody else.
And next week, Lori's going to tell.
But I mean, it's very interesting because I feel like I knew it was coming that he wasn't the father of that kid. But I didn't guess that's who the father. And it's going to be interesting to see later on why this girl thinks that he's the father. Like, is she is she just putting things together that actually aren't, it isn't that, you know what I mean? Or
yeah,
what are the reasons is going to be very interesting.
I don't think he's the dad. That's just going to fuck him. That's something to complicate his relationship with Mare. That's going to fuck shit up in the town.
Yeah. And it's going to fuck shit up for her on the case. But mm-hmm. also this is the writing. They're just laying it down.
Yeah.
They're giving us more. They're just making it more complicated and more, you know, heightening yeah. things.
Where do we go from here? That's the end of episode two, basically.
No, we didn't say the part about how Mare said to her daughter, what is this? And the daughter says, that's a summons for dad.
Oh, yeah. That's a summons.
And then it goes. Then we get the shot across back behind the house of mm-hmm. after this girl has just said she thinks it's dad of the dad outside.
Yeah. Bringing in the tricycle. I think it's too easy to think that. I don't think it's Frank's kid. I wonder if he, I don't even want to say he slept with her. I don't know.
I don't feel like he did either, but then I feel like these shows, I cannot trust my instincts whatsoever.
Yeah. And it's not like, I know some shows try to say, I think this person did it. And this is, you can have your theories, but it's like, if we're wrong, it's not the end all be all. It's not a big deal. It's like, we enjoy the show and this show is good and we're going to make predictions. It's fine if we get them, you know, if we're not right.
Well, they're also going to throw a whole lot more shit at us. You know what I mean? This is not, we haven't even gotten all the shit that's going to be thrown at us.
Right. We've got four more episodes. I think episode five, shit's going to hit the fan and everything else is going to be like a denouement. You have all the rising action in the first few, the penultimate episode is going to be like, holy shit. And then the next one's going to be like resolution. That's my prediction, but I think Deacon Mark is a problem.
I think he's a problem too.
And
I think Aaron's dad is a problem, but obviously he just shot that kid. But yeah. It's so funny. Nobody liked that kid. So we're like, whatever, but I don't know if I think that kid's dead.
Yeah. I don't think he's dead either.
Something's going on there.
Yeah.
And then obviously there's a lot of things going on because we're also going to have to link back to the girl that's been missing a year. So there's a lot of things that aren't just the murder that are nefarious. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be sussing out what's Aaron and what's other things that we don't know about yet. And then also we're going to be uncovering Mare's history and her ex-husband's history.
Because they said even at the crime scene, just kind of clearing something up, they said something like her phone was missing. And she was 13 miles away from where her body was 13 miles away from where the phone was or something.
Yeah, the phone last gave its last signal.
Yeah. And so she was at the time of that episode, she had called Verizon and reached out to them. They hadn't gotten back to her. So they don't even have those details yet.
I don't think they have the bicycle yet either, which I assume we're going to find soon.
Yeah, because there's some kind of trailer or teaser that shows that pink bike. Somebody's dumping something off a bridge. Mm-mm. We don't know how this shit connects. There's so much. And she was shot, right? Aaron was shot.
Aaron was shot in the head.
Yeah.
At close range, with I believe a handgun. Mm-hmm. And we also now know that her dad has a handgun. Because, you know, I grew up in a town like this. People have rifles. They're hunting towns. But a handgun is a different thing entirely.
Yeah. So it's some shit going on. Because they did ask the kids, did you hear a gunshot? You sure did you hear? Yeah. And she was probably sexually assaulted. So it's a lot of shit.
It's a lot of shit. And then we have like the emotional turmoil of all of, besides the two women, the two young women, there's like the emotional fallout of all the characters happening and their relationships with each other. So it's really, and then all of these out of the park performances that really just reach into your soul and grab you.
Yeah. Well, Leah, I think this has been great. This has been an amazing episode of East Town and Down.
He's toning down. I can't wait until next week. Oh my God, what's going to happen?
I don't know. But I'm excited to find out. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Take it easy, everybody.
Bye.